I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, happy Thanksgiving if we're talking about my favorite holiday and includes food, football, family, and in this case, Matt Baker, who joins us now. And Matt, happy Thanksgiving to you. We've got lots of college football to talk about. May not be so much of a happy Thanksgiving at the Dan Mullen household. They've got some things to probably regret. But nonetheless, we've talked about it for weeks. The University of Florida finally pulled the trigger. You were there at the Missouri game, and that did not go well for Dan Mullen. He doesn't get a chance to coach this Saturday against Florida State. So in the end, what was the final proverbial nail in the coffin, as they say?
Hey, well, first of all, I appreciate you having me on, and happy Thanksgiving to all of you for listening and everything. The final nail in the coffin was all of the other nails that had happened. It was a confluence of events and a series of missteps really over the last 4 years. You know, Dan had said at various points this season, basically, you're never as high as it, you know, it's never as good as it seems or as bad as it seems. So when you kind of start parsing that out and thinking about it, there were some cracks and some issues that were there a while ago that it was easy to overlook when you got Kyle Pitts and Kyle Trask and Kadarius Toney. I mean, particularly recruiting. There's not a ton of young talent on this team. I mean, they're not schmucks. I'm not saying that. But there's not a lot of dudes either. And it was easy to overlook that when you've got a first-round tight end and a first-round receiver and an NFL quarterback. But when those guys left, there were some issues. I think there were issues with accountability, for sure, starting at the very, very top with Dan Mullen himself. You look at some of the ways he excused and poo-pooed losses, be it kind of looking the other way, and, oh, look at let's pack the swamp after Texas A&M, and him saying that, you know, I wasn't trying to start anything. I didn't start anything with the Missouri fight. I was just trying to get my guys out of there. Like, that didn't make sense at the time. That's not what I saw with my own eyes, but that's what he said. And, you know, losing to Oklahoma the way they did in the Cotton Bowl and saying that wasn't the 2020 team. It was a kickstart to 2021. All those things, those little things kind of add up. And I think there were some clear issues with attention to detail. There's a reason Florida, you know, made a lot of the plays the first couple of years in close games. And then the past 2 years, they were not making those plays. And it's a little thing here and there. The blocked field goal against Kentucky, missed extra point against Alabama, on and on. And finally, what it showed up with on Saturday was a defense that never fixed the run game. They showed progress at times. And then Missouri's running back runs for 102 yards in the second half. You see an offense that kind of struggled with an identity, an offensive line that still wasn't great. Quarterback who was fine, but, you know, they could have had Matt Corral, who's a Heisman Trophy candidate at Ole Miss, but Dan chose Emory Jones, and that was that. And then the very last play was kind of fitting for the way the Mullen tenure went the last 2 years. Missouri, to their credit, chose to go for the win with a 2-point conversion in overtime. Slipped a tight end out from right to left. Gators didn't cover him, so it was a blown coverage. That's what ultimately did Dan Mullen in. And I think anybody who watched Florida over the last 2 years saw a lot of those types of things. So it was fitting that was the nail in the coffin, Rick.
You know, it's interesting, and I don't know Mullen personally, okay? And sometimes, you know, what we see come across the TV screen is not really who somebody is. But there seemed to be some hubris with him, you know.
Some?
Yeah, I know I'm the master of understatement.
I'm going to get myself in trouble here. I shouldn't.
No, I want you to say what you think.
No, go on.
But you can criticize the host. This is an open dialogue here. We don't, you know, a lot of hubris, obviously. But I think my point is that even going back to Mississippi State, and I thought he did an unbelievable job, and I know Starkville. I've been there. I played against them in baseball. It's not the same thing, but football, my goodness. Well, you talk about an uphill climb, when you're going against the likes of Alabama every year. So, you know, for him to have accomplished what he did there was more than noteworthy. But he did have a quarterback that was pretty good. And you give him credit, all the credit in the world for helping to develop him. But, you know, now Dak Prescott is Dak Prescott, and we know now, that he could make a program shine. And, again, Mullen found him, developed him, all of that. But then he comes to Florida, and his claim to fame at Florida, having been there, he was part of Urban Meyer's staff. And there's some hubris with Urban Meyer, too. And so, you know, you tend to pick up some of the best and worst, habits of the guys that that you work for, I think, at times. I just never felt like, you know, you got the feeling that that Mullen was a whole lot of sizzle and not a ton of steak. And I guess that sounds, you know, being critical of him, but, you know, he acted like he had accomplished more than he did, even when he was at Florida. You mentioned the whole, you know, the fight thing. And I thought, you know, the ultimate walk-off was the Missouri coach, you know, doing the Darth Vader at routine, because we saw that a year ago. I mean, he was prepared for that one, right? But that was embarrassing. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to blow your own horn if you're good, right? Everybody else will play Louis Armstrong for you. I mean, they know when you're good. I just felt like Mullen was always selling something. He was selling why they lost. He was selling why they're going to be better. He was selling, the New Year's Day games and that sort of thing. But in reality, I don't think that his players responded to him. And we know, you've documented this, that the recruiting just wasn't there. I mean, you know, once those three players went to the NFL, they suddenly were not very good. There weren't any guys coming up from behind them. So, yeah, it always seemed to me like, you know, and you put it well, look over here, don't look there, right? Like, there was no there. I mean, at the end of the day, the other teams beat them because they were better and they were better prepared, and he could not win his way out of this. And it's shocking in a sense that if you'd have told me at the beginning of the year Dan Mullen was going to be fired, I would have been really surprised. But having watched it, I think you put it well, it was slowly and then all at once. You know, I mean, that's kind of the way his career went there.
Yeah, it was stunning and unsurprising at the same time. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I had been planning just to peek behind the curtain. I think some people kind of like that. I had been planning for this for a while, as a writer, as a reporter. I mean, spoiler, yeah. Like, I had a story written, I think it was after South Carolina. I drove, right. I talked about it the other week during the Samford game. I was driving to Florida State, Miami. I get to up in the press box in FSU. I briefly say hello to my colleagues and put my head down, and I'm watching the game and freshening up the obituary on his Florida mm-hmm. tenure. And I was at Missouri, and late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, I sent my bosses the latest version of the obituary for his tenure in case it happened.
Yeah,
it happened literally on my flight as I was flying back. I paid the $8 for the Southwest Wi-Fi, and I'm trying to get get it to work on my laptop, and I can't, so I pull my phone and. All right, well, let's see if there's anything going on. Okay, it happened. All right, now what? So I say that because I was prepared, because I knew there was a chance for it. But like you said, if you had told me 2 months ago, I never would have thought it. It's just right. That there were little issues. Pat Dooley used to be for the Gainesville Sun. And he asked Scott Strickland a question during the news conference the other day. And basically said it was the problem that Dan didn't get enough Florida level players. And here I'm going to read you part of Strickland's response here. People look at losses as a cause to get rid of a coach, but a lot of times the losses or things that don't go right on the field, those are symptoms of other issues. And again, those issues are recruiting, which kind of piled up to where they don't have a lot of dudes, to where They had to bring in three transfers, immediate transfers at defensive tackle because they hadn't developed anybody there. It shows up where, you know, they went from having Van, you know, they brought in Van Jefferson as a transfer his first year, and you know, that was a great addition. And Trayvon Grimes from Ohio State. But then you look at the receivers they had with Josh Hammond in the NFL, Freddie Swain in the NFL, Tyree Cleveland in the NFL, Kadarius Toney in the NFL, Kyle Pitts at tight end in the NFL. And now you look and there's not a lot. There's not like a couple great receivers that you can point to. Maybe some of them will get there, but the you know, Florida should have receivers, and they don't have great receivers. The offensive line didn't develop the way they wanted it to or the way it should have because they didn't recruit enough high-level offensive line. Florida is supposed to be – I hate the whole we're DBU kind of thing. That's one of the things that drives me crazy. But Florida should have good defensive backs. But 2 years in a row, their secondary has been prone to breakdowns, again, like the one that was the fatal straw Saturday against Missouri. So it was just a bunch of things – that led into it. And yes, I do think Dan Mullen's arrogance is part of it. There will be this isn't just like something that came out of the blue. No, there were people in that building who would tell you repeatedly he was the smartest guy in any room he ever walked into. That was something that rubbed people wrong at Mississippi State. It's easy to look past that in Starkville when, you know, he's the second winningest coach they've ever had. But it's different at Florida. Look, the crowning achievements for both of them were going to the Orange Bowl at Mississippi State and Florida.
Yeah,
it's one that's a great job at Mississippi State. At Florida, you're supposed to go to the Orange Bowl.
You're supposed
to do better than that. And Dan didn't. And ultimately, that's kind of what did it in. He wasn't winning at a high enough level. And it's one thing to have a down year. It's another thing to have a down year with nothing you can point to. Other than Anthony Richardson, whatever his status is, to say this is how it's going to get better. You can't point to continued improvement over the season. There wasn't any. You can't point to great assistants that are going to come because you don't know that that's going to happen. You can't point to young players that are getting developed. There's not enough of them. You can't point to recruiting and guys who are going to come in because they're not there. And you add all that stuff up to where there was no real hope that you could see for Dan Mullen getting to the point where they're going to beat Georgia next year or the year after that. And at that point, Scott Strickland woke up Sunday morning, saw that, and made a move.
Well, we can spin this forward a little bit and speculate as we are taping this on Thanksgiving Eve. And that is a couple things. One, obviously we want to know, you know, who the Gators are likely to hire. In other words, what pool of candidates do you think that they will draw from? And then along with that, how good is this University of Florida football job? I mean, look, you know, you're in the state of Florida. There's so many players, and the university has so many resources that they're able to give Dan Mullen $12 million to not work for them. So, you know, with a new football facility, all that stuff, there's really no excuses, but they still need to get the right guy. And I was talking to a coach who's pretty well known, and Matt, you know who I'm talking about, when I asked him if he were a candidate, and what he told me is no chance, and I think this guy would be a good candidate. He says they're going to get a big name. Do you see a big name, or what kind of a coach? Who are the prospects out there that you think they'll draw from?
Let's start with the big picture here. How good of a job is it? It's a top 10 job in the country. At least that. They haven't invested the way they've needed to keep up with the Joneses, but that's changing. I mean, it was 2015, I think is when they opened the indoor, which is it's a fine indoor. It's 100 yards. There's a roof over it. It does the job. I'm not a big facilities guy. And then you look and the $85 million Huebner training complex, whatever it's called, their football center is going to open at some point next year. Can't remember if it's spring or summer, but some point before the 22 season begins, they'll have this new football facility that they can use to try and sell recruits and to maximize efficiency and all that sort of thing. So they're getting better in the infrastructure. They're catching up. They're not like where Alabama is, but they're, you know, it's getting to the point where facilities should not be a major liability the way it has been. you look at some of the other stuff, though. I can also say, too, the last three coaches have all been fired, yes, and Muschamp and McElwain and Mullen. But they've all had some level of success, right? I mean, Muschamp went to the Sugar Bowl. And what were they? 11-2. McElwain won back-to-back SEC East titles. The East was down. It wasn't what it is now. Georgia's not the superpower it is. But still, you go to the SEC championship 2 years in a row. That's something. And then Dan obviously had two top 10 finishes and three straight New Year's Six Bowls and won two of them. That's something, too. The problem is, as Strickland said, the AD, they couldn't sustain that level of excellence. And that's the expectation. That's the standard. There's really a handful of schools in the country that can do that, or say they do that. Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame, maybe Oklahoma. It's probably about it. Maybe you can argue a couple others in there too, Oregon. So it's really, really hard to do. But Florida is realistically one of the schools where that it should happen, especially right now with FSU and Miami both being not very good. Florida should expect to be a premier program because that's what they are. And the next coach needs to understand those expectations and needs to figure out a way to meet them, starting, of course, with recruiting. Because if you don't have the dudes, it's not going to happen. So the other part, who can you get? The big name thing is interesting because it kind of depends on what you consider a big name. We'll start with the latest again as we're talking 4/23 on Wednesday. Bob Stoops told an Oklahoma radio station, shout out to my friends at the Sports Animal out there, that he is not a candidate. Cross him off the list. James Franklin, I know how much you love James Franklin and his game managing abilities, Rick, but sadly he's not on the list either. He's took Yay. A 10-year... Yeah, he signed a 10-year extension for like $7.5 million a year, depending on how you do the math. So he's not in the mix either. So the question is who? The name, again, as we record this, things are fluid. The name that everybody's chattering about is Billy Napier at Louisiana Lafayette. I think he would be a very, very good hire. He's worked under Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney. So he knows what a high-level program looks like. I think he's 33 and 5, something like that, the last 3 years at Louisiana Lafayette. They had 10-win seasons before he arrived there. He has won at least 10 each of the last 3 years. They got a chance to win the Sun Belt next weekend. They're hosting that game. Not this weekend, but next. So I think he is kind of the leader in the clubhouse. I haven't heard a ton about Lane Kiffin here lately. I don't know that Kiffin would be the right cultural fit for Florida, but I think he'd be interesting. Matt Campbell at Iowa State is a name that's kind of come up a little bit more. When you look at the landscape as a whole, there's three premier jobs in LSU, USC, and Florida, but there's not a ton of great candidates. You know, Luke Fickell, it seems like he's going to stay at Cincinnati. Mario Cristobal has a $9 million buyout if somebody wanted to get him from Oregon. Is it possible that Mario leaves? Maybe. And honestly, he would be my top choice. But that's certainly not a given. And if he's not in the mix, and Luke Fickell's not in the mix, and Franklin's not in the mix, and Bob Stoops isn't in the mix, and there's still those three premier jobs. So I say all that to say that it's possible that this is the time where Matt Campbell wants to jump, because one of these three big jobs that's open, maybe he seems to be one of the top guys there. And I guess the other kind of, I don't know, they'd call him a wild card, but Bill O'Brien, the Alabama offensive coordinator, you know, they've got a top 10 scoring offense there this year. He did a good job at Penn State, maybe better than good, his couple years there after the Sandusky scandal and Joe Paterno's departure. So I think, you know, maybe he's a guy that gets in the mix. It's just kind of a wild card in there as well.
You know, I'm just going to say this. I'm sure Billy Napier is a great coach. He's probably better than a great coach. And somebody will be damn proud and successful to have him. Mm-hmm. Doesn't do anything for me, and I can't imagine he'd do a lot for a recruit unless he's just dynamic in somebody's living room. And even then, I mean, let's face it, these kids can go anywhere and be on TV. They can go anywhere and, you know, the old saying, right? They could tell you what the Oregon uniform combinations are, you know, before they could tell you what Florida wears. I mean, I just, when did sexy die? You know what I'm saying? Like at the University of Florida, you go back and you go, okay, Will Muschamp. First of all, we got to get through the M's, don't we? We got to stop with the M's.
Correct.
Then McElwain, he's, you know, he's moving up, right? He's a guy coming from a Logan collar. He's moving up. Dan Mullen, well, he was out for Florida guy, you know, it was Arthur Herb, and look at the job he did, and moving up. At least he was in the SEC. I mean, you reach for a guy that's not a Power 5 head coach, and you're going to tell me that that's going to turn the tide? I mean, boy, you better be right. You know, I would much, if I were a Florida booster, and God knows I'm not, but I would want a track record this time. I would want, and not that Mullen didn't have it at Mississippi State, because he did, and I understand that hiring. That hiring made sense to me at the time. The performance didn't match it. But, man, I need some flash here. You know what I mean? Like, I need some name recognition. And the one thing I'll say about Matt Campbell is we all know who he is, and he's been successful. And so that makes sense to me. Bill O'Brien, I mean, he may not be everybody's cup of tea. There's no doubt about that. But guys coming to the universities right now, they want to get to the league. And Bill O'Brien was in the league, and he won there. His failure was as a GM. It seems like if you've gone through the Alabama rehab program as a coordinator and you're ready for a head college football coaching job, all those guys seem to get one and have done pretty well. That makes sense to me. But, like, why can't Florida attract whoever the number one candidate is? They're just not that team anymore. Like you said, top 10, you'd like to think they were better than that as a job.
Okay, so a couple things. I'm going to go through the playoff rankings here, and here's how their coach got there. Okay, Georgia, Kirby Smart, top assistant in Alabama. Ohio State, Ryan Day, assistant, promoted internally. Nick Saban came from the NFL. All right, he's the exception here. Luke Fickell was not like it. You know, again, Cincinnati, a little bit different because they're a group of five, but still, it's not like he was the superstar head coach coming up either. Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, again, a little bit different. He definitely had sizzle and some success
big
in the NFL
name,
and
big
in college.
Name, yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. I believe he came from Cincinnati, so he wasn't like coming from a big name, super name program.
Yeah.
Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State, promoted internally. Dave Aranda at Baylor. You know, he was the coordinator for LSU's title team. Go down, Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma, promoted internally. Mario Cristobal, Oregon, promoted internally. Mel Tucker at Michigan State was from head coach at Colorado. And before that, he was an assistant at Georgia. It's not like
but at least
any program is getting the, especially the Blue Bloods, they're not hiring guys from Power 5 jobs. It doesn't happen very much anymore, Rick. Jimbo leaving FSU for A&M is the exception. Willie Taggart and Dan Mullen leaving to come to the state of Florida, those are exceptions. It just doesn't happen a lot. I mean, shoot, yeah, Michigan State's going to pay Mel Tucker, the rumor, again, this, I don't think this has been officially signed or anything. They're going to pay him 10 years, $95 million at Michigan State. The Northwesterns, the Illinois, those type of programs that used to be power, I mean, Indiana and Tom Allen might have been in the mix at some point. Jeff Brohm's getting paid like $5 million at Purdue. And in theory, he could have been in this mix. But the top coaches at the lower level Power 5 schools are all getting paid. And they don't necessarily see a need to jump to a Florida where a guy can go to three straight New Year's Six Bowls, get fired the next year, and he's gone. Look at Mark Stoops at Kentucky, who's done a fantastic job with the Wildcats. Beat Florida twice, which I don't know the last Kentucky coach, if there is one, that beat Florida twice. Maybe like Bear or something. He in a normal world, go back 10 years. Yeah, of course he would want to go from Kentucky to Florida, but dude's getting absolutely paid. He's got a stable job where if he wins 7 games a year at Kentucky every year, they might build a statue of him before it's all said and done. If he wins 7 games 2 years in a row at Florida, he might be gone. So the money is so great at your Purdue's and Kentucky's, and the pressure is so great at your Florida's and LSU's that you don't need to jump from one school to the other. Again, Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern is a good example. And I'm not, I went to school there. I covered him as a student. He's a fantastic coach. He could do a great job. There's no doubt in my mind at Texas, USC, Notre Dame, any of them. But he stayed at Northwestern where he is getting paid. The expectations are reasonable. They have just built a football palace that's like $200 million or something stupid. And he can compete for to win the division and have a shot at a Big Ten championship. And that's enough for him. So, yeah, you're not going to get the days of somebody at a mid-level Power 5 school immediately jumping because it's Florida or Georgia or LSU. That doesn't happen very much anymore. Does it happen some? Yes, absolutely. As we sit here today, I expect Dave Aranda to leave Baylor for LSU again. I'm not reporting that. That's just what I would guess if I had to. So yes, it still happens sometimes, but it doesn't happen as much as it used to anymore. So the key is who would be willing to take the Florida job and makes sense. And maybe it is Matt Campbell who kind of makes that move. Or maybe it's Billy Napier, who might be, for all we know, might be the next Urban Meyer in the way that he built Louisiana Lafayette into one of the better Group of Five programs, beat Iowa State a couple years ago. Maybe it's him. So I think it's not just about Florida. It's about the system and the ecosystem of college football more than anything else.
Yeah, and the money has gotten too great at those other schools, like you mentioned. You can coach there maybe until you're 70 because the expectations aren't going to eat you alive, but you're not going to make a ton less money than you would at the University of Florida. And guys like Ryan Day and Lincoln Riley, they were on the staffs of some pretty iconic coaches, as it turned out. Urban Meyer, Bob Stoops. I mean, those guys, were big names, and they moved on. So they had good coaching staffs, and they promoted them, and they're both doing really, really well, I suppose. We'll see. Look, they got to play Florida State. They are going to do that, with an interim coach. I don't know that it matters really at this point whether Florida were to win the game. I mean, there's not much at stake, but Florida State certainly could benefit, and they've been on a bit of a roll. So for them, this is still a big game, right?
Well, it's still a big game for both programs. It's still Florida State. It is. Yeah. It still matters. Yeah. That's why I was a little surprised Florida fired Mullen on Sunday, just because I don't know what all you gain by starting a week early. Like, if they wanted to fire him after South Carolina, totally get it. Completely understand. Or after Samford, totally get it. That was a debacle. But I thought at this point, with one game left, and that game is against Florida State, that matters to the players, matters to the boosters, matters to the program, matters to everybody. I might have thought that they would keep Dan for another week to maximize the chance of beating FSU for everything that that means. I guess they determined, hey, there's no point in waiting when you know what you're going to do and to begin with. And then also you get a head start on coming up with a candidates list and making sure that everybody knows this job is open. So when Billy Napier's fielding other calls, you're in that conversation as well. But yeah, this is a huge game really for FSU. I mean, to think of where they were a couple months ago after the Jacksonville State debacle, to go from that to where they are right now, with a chance to go to a bowl. I don't know why Florida's favored in this game. I really don't. So for FSU to make that progress and then be able to the serious chance to cap it off with a win over the rival, to beat Miami and Florida in the same year, go to a bowl and get all that developmental time, which is huge for a young team and a young coaching staff. FSU is in a pretty good place. I mean, they're more stable than anybody else in the state, which is a stunning thing to say, but here we are.
Well, I'm going to watch. It's going to be – I still love it when Florida and Florida State go at each other, because those kids know each other, obviously. A lot of them recruited by both programs, and it's usually a very competitive game, although you're right, I'm not sure why Florida is favored. We'll have to see how that one turns out. It is rivalry weekend, though, and there are plenty of other games to talk about.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
One that I think will have national championship implications, no doubt about it, is Michigan and Ohio State. It's been a while. Obviously, Harbaugh has never beaten the Buckeyes. This might be his best chance. I still don't think they're going to do it. Matt, what do you make of this matchup?
Yeah, I still don't think they're going to do it either. Maybe there's a chance if they can rattle C.J. Stroud and you know, with Aiden Hutchinson, the DN, who's one of the better defensive players in the country. Maybe they can get after him. Maybe their good backs can find a way to puncture Ohio State the way Ohio State's defense kind of got hit a little bit early on. But Ohio State's got, just an elite receiving core. Travion Henderson, their running back, is fantastic. I think Ohio State's got too many weapons. And Georgia's the best team in the country. I feel pretty safe saying that. Ohio State might not be that far behind them at this point, the way they're playing.
Yeah, they've been playing really, really well, putting up a lot of points as their quarterback, and their wide receivers are outstanding. They've got quite a few targets they can throw to. Before we get too far away from the state, speaking of rivalries, the war on I-4, USF, in terms of firing, they had some staff changes as well. This is a big recruiting, fertile ground for both teams that battle for that. So, boy, it would be a great way for USF to finish the season if they could beat Central Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious to see what that defense looks like after firing defensive coordinator Glenn Spencer over the weekend. USF had been making progress. Like, you could see the baby steps along the way. It did not show up in them winning, aside from Temple and then the FAMU. But you could see them getting better. And then they lay an egg at Tulane. I was driving from St. Louis over to Columbia to cover the Florida-Mizzou. Then I kind of walk around the stadium a little bit, checking stuff out, because I had never been before. We want to see what it's like. Then I check my phone and see USF is down like it was a 35-7 or something. Like, what the heck happened here? it was for all the progress USF had made, I don't want to say it disappeared, but they looked clueless on defense. They looked clueless on offense. They didn't know where the ball was going, so they couldn't stop it. There were times when the receiver and quarterback did not look like they were on the same page. It was just bad. It's bad enough to make you kind of pause about what the direction is that they're going. What that means going forward is USF needs a good performance against UCF, no question. They need something positive to end the season on. Of course, it would be nice for the Bulls if they won, but even just being very competitive against UCF would be maybe a sign of progress that they're moving in the right direction as they come into this very pivotal offseason for Jeff Scott in terms of recruiting, in terms of the transfer portal, in terms of whatever he's going to have to do with his staff, because obviously he's got one high-profile position to fill, and we'll see what else happens as well. So it's pivotal that USF figures something out and shows some semblance of positivity to end this season on, to get people excited about the Bulls' future.
You want to leave a good last impression. Finally, I'll get you out on this one, Matt. Cincinnati finally broke through, ranked number 4 in the college football playoffs. Can they hold it? What do they have to do? They had a big win over SMU.
They finally looked like they deserved it. I mean, there were times earlier this year, obviously the win over Notre Dame. Well, it was nice, but we talked about it on here. I was critical of Cincinnati because I saw them hang around, let a USF team that's not very good hang around, just like they did Navy, just like they did Tulsa. So for Cincinnati to go out and thump a good SMU team the way they did, that is a team that's worthy of being in the playoff. Like if things had broken a certain way and Cincinnati had gotten in, even without dominating, just because Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and those guys beat themselves up, then fine. But I also, like I said, last week or the week before, Cincinnati did not have to be there. They didn't, it wasn't going to be a travesty if they got left out. But if they play the way they did against SMU, they've got East Carolina this week, Houston next week for the conference title. If they play like that, they absolutely deserve to be in the playoff, period, regardless of what else happens. I suppose there's probably a scenario out there where they could lose one of those games and still get in, or really lose this week and still get in. If Oklahoma and Oklahoma State like split the next two games and, you know, Bama gets blown out by Georgia or something, maybe there's some scenarios. But the important one is this. If they win out, I think at this point they are going to be in. And I think it's great for the sport to have somebody who's not Oklahoma, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, to have somebody new in the playoff. And the fact that it is a group of five team is significant as well. And, you know, I think that if I had to put money right now, I would think Cincinnati's in the playoff. And I don't know that they're going to be able to win a game, let alone two, but that doesn't matter. I think it's wonderful that if it shakes out this way, that we'll have somebody new in to watch in the playoff, either in the Cotton Bowl or in the Orange Bowl.
Their prize could be Alabama or Georgia, and you just don't know how that's all going to shake out. But certainly, maybe Ohio State even. Certainly good to see them break through, because it is history in the making. He's Matt Baker, and I can't believe we're at the end of the regular season in college football. It just seems to have flown by. Have a great Thanksgiving, Matt. Safe travels up to Gainesville for Florida State, and we'll be reading you in the Tampa Bay Times.
Sure. Thanks, Rick.
All right, we're going to get you prepared for the Bucs and the Colts tomorrow. Tom Brady will have his chance to talk to us, even though it is Thanksgiving Day. We'll talk to him today and have that for you on tomorrow. And then also we'll get into this subject, the giant, enormous, ginormous contract that the Rays have given, or Wander Franco has earned. Their young infielder is breaking the bank, as they say, over there at the Rays. And so we'll want to get into that and discuss whether that was a good move, great move, or will the Rays maybe move with him? Maybe that had something to do with the cash that they plan on earning for Wander. But absolutely a stunning contract for him as well. So all of that, I want to wish you each and every one, thanks for listening, and have a great Thanksgiving. We have a lot to be thankful for. We're thankful for all our listeners and those of you who have made this podcast what it is today, a very successful endeavor, and we enjoy doing it and bringing it to you. We just want you to have a safe and happy holiday, and we will be back here on Friday. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great Thanksgiving, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.